tonight's episode of the 31st Lap Podcast is brought to you by DirtTrackDigest.com. If it's on dirt, it's on Dirt Track Digest.
This is the 31st Lap Podcast, recorded live in the studios of FingerLakes1.com in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now, your host, Chris Marquardt.
Good afternoon, good evening, welcome to the 31st Lap. Fun episode on deck tonight, episode number 220 of the 31st Lap. We're going to be hanging out a little bit with Marty Gallagher, who is an announcer out in the upper Midwest. We bumped into him when we were on location up in St. Peter for an event up that way, and we just happened upon one another when he was looking for some lineups, and usually don't come across fans that are looking for lineups at demolition derbies. We got trading some messages and talking back and forth, and found out that he was an announcer, and I thought it would be a fun conversation to have, just kind of comparing notes for what dirt track racing is like in New York and to what Marty's been able to see up there in Minnesota. Of course, the racing tonight down there at Volusia at the Dirt Car Nationals for the last two nights has been washed out. I saw David Gravel pick up a win in the sprint cars earlier in the Dirt Car Nationals program. All the UMP modified stuff has wrapped up. That was some exciting racing there. But in terms of the Dirt Modifieds and the World of Outlaws Craftsman Late Models, not going to get up and off the ground tonight. That's already been rained out and sort of put a damper on things the last two nights. The individuals that were injured when that sprint car cleared the fence, they are at this point recovering. So best wishes to them, and hopefully everything can continue to carry on and uptick for them. A couple statements being issued from Dirt Car attesting that the safety of Volusia Speedway is still intact, and it's one of those freak accidents that we all know could happen at any given time. Hopefully, though, a lot of the tracks in our home area here in New York and in the Finger Lakes take a good close look at what their safety fences and their protocols are, so that we don't get into one of those situations when the Empire Super Sprints or Patriot Sprint Tour or even World of Outlaws come to visit some of our home tracks up here. So turning our attention now to our esteemed guest, Marty Gallagher. Man, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me tonight. Appreciate it.
You bet. First question is, how'd you get into motorsports as a whole? And I know that part of Minnesota that we were in is very deep with motorsports, between the sled racing and the lake top racing that they do in the wintertime this time of year. Oh, it's been a little warm, so we probably didn't get on the ice much. But then
I know it's fun being around here in Minnesota. You got a couple different seasons. So you got the ice motorsports with the snowmobile racing, snowcross, or on the ice racing, cars or snowmobiles as well. And then obviously the we'll say the race season with plenty of dirt tracks at it. I don't know the exact last number. I think there's about 32 dirt tracks throughout the state of Minnesota right now. Mm-hmm. Some kind of open and shut down as seasons go along with fair boards and whatever other, obviously owners can't quite make it at one point in time, but might get some new sponsorship and they open their track back up. And then on the flat blacktop asphalt side of things is basically where I grew up on.
Yeah.
Home track, Oakland Speedway, which is a NASCAR weekly series racing track that runs Saturday nights, and grew up 5 minutes away from there. And I've spent pretty much my entire life, that's always been home base. But luckily enough, with friends and family, I've been able to branch out into plenty of other different racing avenues, with it being a lot of dirt stuff and doing some announcing along those lines and different radio shows and such throughout just not only the upper Midwest, but got to go out to Montana before a couple times, and then I actually made it out to East Coast before too with used to be the former ASA late model series, being on a crew guy with a friend of mine that still races around here and there around the upper Midwest, and going down south. Like right now, I obviously got speed weeks going on with the dirt tracks and asphalt tracks, and it's always fun to look on Twitter or Facebook or whatever you look, see all the results. Like you were saying, though, the rain's been kind of the damper there the last couple nights, and I did see that the New Smyrna, which they run the mods and the super lates and pro late models and stuff, should be up and running tonight. I think they got a memorial race with the pro style modifieds pilot lapper tomorrow night. But the dirt car nationals seem to be a little bit wet.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. We're looking forward to.
No, it's, you know, it's, I've always been, always just grew up around it with friends and family and really enjoy it. And I realized at a young age that I'm not a race car driver. So the way to be part of the motorsport realm of things is to do some announcing, do some pit crew, and just kind of always be around the track. And eventually someone will allow you to take along with them.
We've got an asphalt track here, Spencer Speedway. We talk a little bit about that, and then we've got quite a few drag strips that dot all over the state. But primarily, it's dirt track heavy for us here in the Finger Lakes and primarily New York and as a whole. Growing up on the asphalt, is the asphalt still where your passion lies, or have you gotten more into the dirt track side of things?
You know, it's, I'd say the dirt side of things in the sense of, you know, asphalt, blacktop, you know, it's, you hear it so many different ways depending on who you're talking to, what part of the region they call blacktop racing, pavement or asphalt.
Right.
But, growing up, there was, four tracks in the state of Minnesota that were paved. And, as time has gone on, those tracks have all shut down except for one. So, besides the state of Wisconsin, there's one track in Iowa. The state of Wisconsin is about more heavily asphalt, but there is still a handful of dirt tracks, too, that it's easy access to be around the dirt race, and it's great race. And I mean, the track that I helped out the last couple seasons, and I was there for 34 nights last year, the World of Outlaw Sprint Cars were there two nights. The World of Outlaw Late Models with USA Nationals was a three-night show, $50,000 to win. They have a United States Modified Touring Series, which is a great series that runs all over the country. And the UMP, the Hell Tour Summer Nationals, showed up for a couple nights. So, and that tracks Cedar Lake Speedways in Wisconsin, but it's only about an hour from where I'm at and an hour, 45 minutes from the metropolitan Twin Cities area. Like how we were saying, we were down in St. Peter the other night, and there's plenty of dirt tracks down near that way in the sense of the Arlington Speedway, which is also run Saturday nights. I guess that's the one thing that's always tough is, you know, you want to get the weekend shows in, and with there's only so many weekend nights that you can attend in different racetracks throughout the summer.
Right, right. We're fortunate. We used to have the mile track at the fairgrounds.
Syracuse, right?
Yeah, that's now since closed. And then the next to that, The big asphalt track that we got, that's Oswego Speedway, where they run the super modifieds, and ISMA comes there periodically. So it's we're pretty fortunate to have a lot of stuff come through our neck of the woods. But I'd love to be able to see that Nationals event, that 3-day show up there with the late models. It's always been something I've wanted to see.
It's definitely a blast. It's great in the sense of Thursday night is when all the guys come into town, or I would say most of the guys. Last year, Scott Blomquist and Brandon Shepard, a couple others, had that suspension going on. Mm. But needless to say, that Thursday night is a complete show itself. So I always tell friends and family that are close by, hey, if you got something going on this weekend, at least come out for Thursday night, because it's always usually about $8,000 to win. Thursday night show, complete program. You got about 60 late models show up just trying to get their cars prepped.
Right.
For the Friday qualified portion, and then, of course, Saturday, the 100-lap main event. It's definitely a bucket list item for people that if they're always asking what's one of the best dirt late model races to go to, USA Nationals, you can't beat the camping in all that area is top-notch. Showers at the facility, the racetrack is always fast, and now it's fun to be a part of. I know last year they had CBS Sports Network broadcast at the race, tape delayed, and it was kind of neat looking back. I think they aired it in about October, so the race is usually early part of August, so it was a couple months later, but it's kind of neat to look back and watch the race and the weekend and kind of reminisce and be like, wow, that was a really cool event to be a part of, and it's one of the most interesting driver introductions that they do. Each driver, they have 24 car starting field, and each car comes out with the spotlight, turn off all the lights and throughout the racetrack, and kind of have like an NBA NHL all-star game feel to it, with the all-star 24 drivers pulling onto the speedway with their race cars.
Did you ever get the chance to, I didn't catch the name of the track that you grew up, you know, right next to. Did you ever get the chance to work at that track?
You know, it's Elko Speedway, not on announcing level. I've always been in the pits, drove a couple stunt rollover contests and trailer races, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I've always grew up out there, and you know, eventually maybe someday I'll end up at Elko Speedway. They got good staff out there right now that does a good job of promoting the place. And at the same time, it seems you got a lot of friends and family that are in the pit area. It's kind of tough when you're up on the booth announcing the races. You don't get enough time to spend with all of them. But no, it's definitely, I mean, it's one of the finest facilities, I would say, in the definitely the upper Midwest. Not only just, we'll say, the top 12 states throughout the Midwest. The owner of the place, Tom Ryan, put a lot of money into it, a lot of suites action. Like, I guess the goal was, we'll say, 10 years ago, before there's Iowa Speedway, which now has IndyCar racing and Truck Series, mm-hmm. Xfinity Series goes there. I think the goal was to make Elko Speedway kind of that venue. I know Rusty Wallace and all those guys had that venture at Iowa Speedway, which that's a great facility too. And it's neat to go check out that place, 7/8 high banked, kind of progressive banking racetrack there, just outside of Des Moines. I guess the way I was going down that is, like, the facility is amazing. A lot of drivers that have never been there before, when they come there for the first time, they're just awestruck. And which is always, you know, it's always great to hear that. It's like, you know, you've done some interviews the last couple weeks, and we're kind of at a standstill of, like, what are we going to do next to keep on promoting our sport of short track racing? And it's, you can only spend so much money on your facility at the same time as you want people to be sitting in those stands and to see that, how amazing of a facility you have, no matter if it's out there in New York or here in Minnesota or wherever, whatever racetrack you go to on a weekly basis.
Where else have you had the chance to go and work? I mean, have you had the chance to call races for some of the major tours? Where else have you got a chance to get out to?
So, talking this with racing, so there's a Wasota Late Model Challenge Series, which one of the main guys, Chris Steffen, who's kind of, actually, I think he's, well, I don't know exactly what city he's in right now, but I know he was down in Florida and Nelson here this past couple week or two. So I'd say I've always looked up to him. He's always kind of put me underneath his wing, and I got to travel around with him throughout the upper Midwest. It was the Wasota Late Model Challenge Series, Dirt Late Models. At that point in time, Jimmy Mars, which is, I'm sure, a name that you recognize, is a former Wasota champion. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Mars has gone on to win the $1 million race in Ohio and stuff like that. And I think last year he won out in Pennsylvania, I believe, mm-hmm. at one of the World of Outlaw races or Lucas Oil races last year. So he's still a competitive racer. But this Wasota sanctioning body has a traveling late model series that races about five different states, and they ran, it's kind of neat because they ran Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights, and so the drivers that ran that could still go home and race their home track and try to run for their own track championship on the weekends. Obviously, right. It's a big time commitment. It's kind of ran June through August, about every other weekend. I ended up being about 12 races, and got to go out to Montana, Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, of course, Wisconsin, Minnesota. Never made it up to Canada yet, but I know there's plenty of racing up that way, too. I'd like to someday make my way up there. But I also got, you know, with that whole sort of late model champ series, got to do some announcing and just kind of driver sign in and just kind of hands all on deck, you know, help out with whatever needs to get done. If it's stuff at the track that the promoter, you know, he forgot to do or didn't have time to do, or if it's stuff on our end that we needed to get drivers signed in, or just kind of name it. It was, you know, all hands on deck, and it was a blast.
And that's pretty exciting, getting to hit all those different states. That's pretty wild.
And actually, was even to, I guess, so somewhat sugarcoat the story. So that was, I got to do that during the week, and then the weekends I was still helping out a friend of mine that ran asphalt stuff. And I think there was one week, so he would race usually Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois. We'd travel a little bit with that. It was called the Mid-Am Stock Car Series, which is a great series. It's been around, I'd say, 20-some years that's mm-hmm. kind of a, well, a lot of guys will say the rookie retiree series. It's a bunch of kids that are trying to come up, get to the ranks to move their way to super late model, hopefully NASCAR someday. Right. Or it's guys that, you know, tried that run, don't want to spend a whole bunch of money, but still like traveling around and going to different racetracks. Like we got to race at Road America, Elkhart Lake Road Course in mm-hmm. Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and Milwaukee Mile, and a couple other very nice venues. And that was on the weekends. So there's a couple weekends or weeks that I got to. I think one week I was in about four different states, and I was at a racetrack 7 nights of that whole week. So it was something to look back on and say you're pretty blessed with who you've been lucky enough to have around and stuff like that, as friends and family and stuff. And, you know, someday, like, it'd be great to get back into that side of things, but all of a sudden you get a little bit older and got a family back at home and stuff like that. It's also kind of nice to stay a little bit closer to home, but it's always still need to be keep your toes in the sport, I guess, in some way.
Yep. It's racing is one of those things where even if you want to quit it, it's not going to let you go.
You're 100% correct. You know. That's what I, my wife, I got beautiful 7-month-old daughter hanging out with me tonight, and we're watching the duels, I think, are going to be going under green here shortly. And that's kind of the thing. It's racing's always going to be part of life. If you grow up with it, it just may not be there every second, but you know, at some point in time, it's definitely going to be there throughout the season at some point in time.
You were talking about learning the craft a little bit and working with the guys with the Wasota Tour. Did you go to school to be classically trained as a short track announcer?
No, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I go to school as in the sense of when I was a kid, I'd always be at the racetrack, and I've always loved the announcing side of things,
mm-hmm.
that I would kind of sneak my way up to the announcer's tower. We were blessed at this Elko Speedway where I grew up, that they have, I would say, he was by far, and he still is talked about as being one of the best announcers in the Midwest, called Rick Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd always let kids come up and hang out by him and stuff like that. And, you know, you wouldn't obviously call the races, but you kind of pretend you were calling the races. And then lucky enough that Chris Steffen and Chris Clark, another guy that's kind of was able to put me underneath, or luckily enough, put me underneath his wing. He was announcer at Rockford Speedway for quite a few years and throughout the upper Midwest. And there's at one point in time, there's that Goody Dash series that kind of ran around the United States. He was one of the key announcers for that.
Right.
I went to school for radio broadcasting, but I guess the goal is always trying to get into motorsports and announcing or writing or in some function of some way, if not at least a full-time job as a fun hobby that I know I was never going to race cars, so if I have to spend money to go to the track and I get to be part of the race night, that's great for me. And I think there's a lot of people that, I guess probably would like to do that or like to race cars and stuff like that. And there's a lot of sacrifices that a lot of people make that get us to the racetrack, which is respectable to everyone. You know, if it's pit crew guys or wives or announcers' wives or obviously the race car driver itself or bosses and stuff like that, there's days that you've had to take off of work to run to a track and stuff like that, it's always nice to have supportive people behind you. And I guess that's kind of been the big key of where I'm at now with racing-wise, announcing and stuff along those lines, that I've been lucky enough to have a good support system. And I guess for young people, like someone has asked me the other day, it's like, how do I get to be where you're at? You know, and I guess I always ask questions and never be afraid to go up and talk to people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been kind of my motto in that sense, and it's been a fun ride this far. Hopefully it's a long, long ride to come. But
what do you do for a living?
I work for a local city, just plow snow in the wintertime and mow in the summertime. So my boss always jokes around, you can take as many days off in the summertime as long as you're around here in the wintertime, or at least close by.
Right.
And actually, that's as we speak, I was a little bit afraid earlier today that I'd be sitting in a plow truck tonight. We got about Well, as we know, weather forecasts, they change about every 30 minutes.
Right.
But it sounds like we got about a foot of snow coming our way here in the next 6 to 8 hours. So, which actually is kind of funny. It works out pretty well. You know, obviously you have your podcast here, which I was able to kind of listen to the last week or two, and it's very entertaining, all the different guests that you have on, Chris. And to your different, you know, obviously, like you're saying, we're all here in the Midwest, and you're on the East Coast, and it's two different types of racing, but at the same time, as we're all at the racetrack, because we love motorsports in some form or the other. No, I guess that's kind of that's what I do for a living, but I always, since my living is, a lot of times we'll say I'm in a truck or in a lawnmower, I get to listen to some different racing podcast, or if I don't get to listen to the race live on the radio or see it live, I can listen to it on Monday while I'm at work, or
right.
The World of Outlaws always has replays and stuff like that with their late models and sprint cars, and it's fun to listen to. And I know the mods up by you guys have some good websites to always listen to a few different races that happened over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Is that your favorite division? You talked a little bit about those the asphalt late models. Is that your bread and butter division, or do you like the street stocks? Do you get off on the four cylinders? What's your?
Mm-hmm. It's you know, it's tough to say. There's great racing in every division at one point or another. I mean, there's. I will just say, I'll go Speedway, the track I grew up on. You know, like one of the best races I ever got to see was a legend car race, which, you know, legends, mm-hmm. what is it, the NX Legend Series, legend yep. cars run all over the United States. Well, I had a handful of NASCAR drivers came in one night, signed autographs, and hopped in these guys' legend cars. Well, they were just dueling 3-4 wide, and that's a very inexpensive class.
Right.
And that's, you know, I was some of the best racing I've ever seen. On the other hand, you know, obviously you got the horsepower with the AAA models, but, you know, side-by-side racing, 2-3 wide, I always joke around, I'm such a race car fan, I'd go watch people race tricycles on carpet. That's how much of a race car fan I am, or like there's actually a track up here that runs some RC racing here in the wintertime. Up in the Twin Cities area, that's kind of neat to check out on Sundays afternoons. And mm-hmm. you know, these guys are just little RC cars, but it's still fun to watch. It's racing, right. It's side by side and competitive. And you know, everyone's goal is obviously win at the end of the day, and that's always kind of neat to see.
Yeah, we've got a bunch.
My answer to that is I have no answer. I love it all.
That's great. Came back at 7 somehow. We had a bit of a
World of Outlaws.
Yeah.
I see, like, World of Outlaws make way up to New York a couple times throughout the summer. Or what's, like, for you, Chris, I guess. I know we talked briefly, but what's, like, one of your favorite, I guess, divisions, as you would call it?
Well, the dirt modified.
You know, obviously we got Big Block Modifieds, which I've never seen in person. Or even like the asphalt modifieds, mm-hmm. NASCAR Touring Modified Series, right. I've never seen in person before, just on TV a little bit. And they look cool and look fast and look like they put on a heck of a show. But what's one of your favorites?
The dirt modified is what I grew up on. I mean, I've got a story similar to yours in that my family was involved with racing only, but only as fans. That we never had cars in the garage, or we were never wrenching on. Race vehicles or anything like that, but I was young, and my dad took me to Canandaigua Speedway. Now it's Canandaigua Motorsports Park. We had Jeremy Corcoran on just a couple weeks ago, talk about the upcoming season, and we got to go see those cars, and that was where I met Steve Payne, and sort of really began to like dirt modifieds. On the periphery, though, I'd always had a thing for late models. I love watching. The World of Outlaws type late model is one of the prettiest cars mm-hmm. to watch go around the racetrack. Just the way that the back end arches underneath itself when they're under throttle in the corners, it was just cool to watch. But I'm definitely a modified guy. Before before anything else. And the conversation, again, we're crossing over using the same terms to describe vastly different cars. The dirt modified out here is much, much different than what the dirt modified is out there.
Primarily, big time.
Like the UMP or IMCA style look to the modified out there, and we've pretty much shunned all of that and created this own animal known in Florida and points between as the Northeast Modified. And they've also got a sportsman division. They got crate motors and smaller tires and things like that, and that's some of the best racing that we've got here. And really, it was the crate program that they brought into the sportsman class that saved that class, because people were spending just an astronomical amount of money to get those cars on the track, and they were just almost they're approaching the budget of a small block modified, which was just unheard of. They brought that, and it really saved the class, and in some cases that the resurgence of that class has really saved some of the racetracks from turning into housing developments or box stores. We had a rash of tracks that closed, and I was interested to hear you say that up in your area some of these tracks are even reopening. Has there been any new tracks built, or is it just tracks that had closed that had come back to life?
Mostly tracks that came back to life, and I think a lot of that had to do with, it may be my opinion, but a lot of fair boards at county fairs, you know. Eventually someone came along that was head of the county fair and wasn't a fan of the motorsports side of things. So they basically shut her down. But then someone else come along and they, realize that there's a avenue and there's plenty of racers around the area that go and travel a little bit. Maybe it's an hour or so away from a track that's 10 minutes down the road. And so they open back up, and it's been successful at a couple different tracks in that sense. In reality, though, there's been more tracks that have closed than opened in the last 5 years, particularly with the asphalt side of things. I mean, the state of Minnesota, at one point in time, we had the state fairgrounds, I-94 Raceway, Fergus Falls Raceway, and Raceway Park were all asphalt tracks 10 years ago, and Elko Speedway included, and now the only track that's alive out of those is Elko Speedway.
Right.
So, and then on the dirt side of things, there's been a handful of tracks that, they shut down, and basically in the sense of they just too much competition, but not enough fans. You know, you got tracks that were trying to go with different sanctioning bodies and competing against each other on the same night, and you'd have drivers that would have to decide, do I go 30 miles that way or 30 miles this way? And it kind of comes down to they'll end up at the track that they felt that they were better treated at. Not saying one track was better than the other track. It's just the one driver may have felt more welcome at this track compared to another track. And I think that's kind of the one thing that I think about with the sport kind of going forward is I think we kind of just need to have open arms to everyone. I always talk about, like, people are like, oh, I like asphalt racing, I like dirt racing, I like this over that. It's kind of like, we probably kind of need to unite and keep together. You know, I think NASCAR back 50, 60 years ago, you know, their race car schedule was what they probably ran 90 nights, like a World of Outlaws schedule, except for they'd race on the dirt and the asphalt throughout the season.
Yeah. The one thing that I noticed about that, trying to compare those, is it's not apples to apples, because back then racing wasn't so specialized. It wasn't an industry. It was still a hobby.
That's very true.
And every shop had a race car or was involved with racing in some way. And the county that you lived in might have four or five racetracks. I mean, every fairgrounds out here has the remnants of a racetrack around the outside that they haven't raced at in 30 or 40 years. And I can think just quickly of like a dozen. A lot of the racetracks that we have in New York are standalone facilities that aren't tied to a fair. They don't have anything else there other than the racing, which it seems like that might be a little bit of a difference between here and the way Minnesota's structured. But we have some that are tied to fairgrounds, but it's not... I think it'd be fair to say that it's not the prevailing majority that are tied to a fair or a fairgrounds. They're independent tracks that operate solely for racing.
Yep, and that's where I would definitely agree with you. I think it's an upper Midwest trend with dirt tracks. I mean, if you looked at the map, everyone says that Iowa has, and I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know Iowa definitely is in the top three in the United States for having the most dirt tracks. Well, that is because every county in Iowa has its own dirt track that they may only race at twice a year, but it's still considered a race car track on the
right.
National Auto Racing Registry that you can pick up, you know, that book that
Speedway Directory
or whatever.
Yeah.
Look at the little map of Iowa and you see about 90 different tracks because it's got to be an upper Midwest thing where the county board, fair board, decides they want a racetrack. And that's where here in Minnesota, a lot of those county boards have kind of decided, hey, we'll have, which I'm still fine with because it's a motorsport kind of theme thing, if it's motocross or tractor pull or monster trucks, stuff like that. But they're not, or if they do have a race, it's only one or two times during their fair. Otherwise, the track just kind of sits there blank. But that is completely different compared to how you guys have it out east, where right. It's, you know, you got this private owners that are trying to make a go of it with their own dollars and their own cash. And that's where it comes to, is someone comes along, and I think that's where these asphalt tracks, you know, a business partner came along, big business, and was like, hey, this would be a perfect spot for Home Depot. Or, like, I know the one Raceway Park here that was just outside of the Twin Cities, you know, turned into basically this asphalt plant, mm-hmm. commercial business in there. And, you know, and for a business, it's probably a great location. Obviously, it's tough. I know there's a lot of people that were disappointed to see that track go that was there for a lot of years. And there's another track up there, I-94, which would be, let's say, 2 hours away from the Twin Cities area. That's turned into kind of another commercial business parking lot for equipment for companies that do a lot of work throughout northern Minnesota. It works out great for them, and they got, obviously, the owners that own the place got a good price for it. And at the end of the day, it's sad to say that you can definitely see why they do it, mm-hmm. but you hope that the answer is no more than yes to keep the sport alive.
In terms of the tracks that you've had the opportunity to go to, you've seen a lot of them in that area. Is there any place that you haven't had the chance to go work at that you really, really want to go to?
Yeah, it'd be Rossburg, Ohio, Eldora Speedway. You know, I haven't been out there yet. I got to lucky enough for close to Knoxville. I know you're talking about trying to make it over to the USA Nationals, and maybe you have made it down to the Knoxville Nationals or the Knoxville Late Model Nationals.
I've never been to Knoxville for anything, but we were at...
Iowa.
I've never been to Knoxville for anything, but I was there for the Dream in Eldora when Bloomquist came across the scales and and Smith ended up getting the win. That I was there that night.
And that's, you know, we're kind of our own worst enemies in the sense of technology-wise. You know, we have owners or promoters complain that no one's showing up to the races, where... with all the technology that we have, you know, I'm sitting here on a cell phone in a house in the middle of Minnesota, and you're up there in upstate New York, and I'm talking to you on a radio show, and I was able to watch that Dream on my cell phone or on my laptop.
Yep.
It's kind of worse for both worlds. It's great because I know exactly what you're talking about, but at the same time, as I'm such a diehard fan, that makes me want to definitely make my way to Eldora, and hopefully check it off the list here sooner than later. How about yourself? Have you, Chris, you made it to a track that you haven't been able to make it yet?
I want to go to Knoxville. I want to go to Cedar Lake. And I'm trying to remember the name of it up there in the Dakotas. Red River Valley. I've always wanted to see something there. Never had the chance to. Our season has sort of been taken over. It's still motorsports talk, but we've got our dedicated show for it on Mondays. Is the demolition derby stuff occupies so much time. And like you said, again, with the technology side of it, we stream derbies from all over the United States. And we'll go to Utah here in a couple of weeks. We'll be in Topeka, Kansas. And in March, we'll be back in Albert Lea, Minnesota at the beginning of May. We've got probably a dozen derbies coming up between now and the middle of July that are going to be live streamed. So it makes it a little bit more challenging to get to some of the tracks and do the traveling that we used to do. In 2003, 2004, something like that, I did 120 races all over the East Coast. And that number has dropped significantly as tracks have closed, as tracks have changed hands, as duties have changed. You know, my time at Black Rock in PR and announcing and stuff and working at that track, and I was at Canandaigua before, which that was really kind of cool when that had finally come full circle, where I went from sitting in the grandstands with my dad watching races there to being able to announce some of these same modified drivers that I grew up watching. It was kind of cool. It was neat to be able to do that. But there's a lot of places that I'd like to get to that just schedule and timing doesn't allow for.
Exactly. I guess it's kind of, you know, I run in that same avenue, but it's also, I guess, kind of look, one side of it is you still get to be around a lot of it that you enjoy, where there's people out there that don't even get a chance to be a part of that. So I guess it's one positive way to look at it. But, you know, that's amazing. When I went out to St. Peter and obviously got to meet you there a couple weeks ago, that was a whole new ball game for me. You know, I've gone to just the local little demo growing up here in town, or just, you know, outside of town, kind of where I grew up. That was the biggest deal to me, you know, to everyone in the area. You got Farmer Joe down the street, you know, him and his kid built this little car. But that, you know, that thing we were out St. Peter, that Napa Winter Slam, that's big boys league out there. And I know that's what you kind of run around with, which is talking to a few drivers and what time and effort and money that goes into it and travel. It's pretty cool to see. And the show was tremendous. The crowd was obviously tremendous too. And I know I talked to a few promoters that do some dirt race asphalt promoters around here, the upper Midwest, and kind of showed them some pictures and told them about the day. And they're like, wow, we're maybe doing something wrong at times.
The crowd's still pretty strong up there, or is that population dwindling for the racing side of things?
You know, it's hit or miss. You got some events that really draw in a good crowd. Then you got some events that you think would draw in a crowd. And it's, we'll say with our region, I guess I don't know how it is, just we'll say upstate New York where you're at, but and I know you're like fingers late, you know, lake region. Well, we got plenty of lakes here in Minnesota.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that like to spend the time at the cabin. So, you know, you're trying to get a good crowd to come out on a Saturday night, and they decide they would rather go to out to the cabin for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but at the same time, as you get some shows that, like that USA Nationals draws a great crowd from 5-6 states.
Right.
If not even more than that. Or, you know, we obviously the Knoxville Nationals, we know that there's people that travel from all over the world to make their way to Knoxville, Iowa. That's actually a track when you're down, and if it works out this August for you, if you're down in southern Minnesota, but there's Jackson Speedway, and their goal is to not to compete with Knoxville, but to kind of run as a sister with Knoxville, and to be as such, like, basically be the same type of nice facility.
Mm-hmm.
As Knoxville, but on a Friday night compared to Knoxville, always run Saturday night with their sprint cars. I know you mentioned earlier David Gravel won, and he used to be, and he still kind of is, I guess, that big game deer stand sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the name who runs that team, but he's the one who was kind of behind the Jackson Motorplex, I think would be the official name of it, in Jackson, Minnesota.
Right.
They put a lot of time and money into it, and that's a place that, I guess, for people to check out if they're in the upper Midwest, or definitely for you, kind of put on a list of, we can make a list of probably 200 pages of different racetracks or race events we'd like to make it to, if it's dirt racing, asphalt, or drag racing, any of those things. It's always kind of fun to be a part of.
Yep. There's always something to add to that list, too. You know, it might not be a big deal yet, but one of those events is going to turn into something where 25 years later, you can turn around and say, you know what, I was the first one.
Yep. Exactly.
You work also with motocross stuff, right? You're making a couple trips into out this way with the your motocross tour, correct?
You know, I don't do any motocross stuff. I was just a fan of it.
Gotcha.
Just kind of following it along. The AMA Supercross guys were just here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, at the U.S. Bank Stadium the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And got to check out that show in person. And it's, you know, that's a whole different ball game too. And those guys are obviously very, very athletic and very, like, whatever term you want to use, but nuts, we'll say, the way they toss those motorcycles around. It's neat to see. I think I did see that. I know Toronto, they're be heading up that way, and I think they're running that MetLife Stadium here in a few months. And I've seen it a handful of times and totally respect it, but at the same time, they're a little bit more crazier than I would like to be.
You had a familiarity with David Gravel. Do you get a lot of sprint car influence up there that you get to go to?
Yes and no. So not as much as there. Well, we'll reverse that, I guess. 5 years ago, there was a decent amount.
Yeah.
World of Outlaws, I think, we're trying to make their way into Minnesota a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those races have cut back.
Right.
But if you're a big World of Outlaws fan and live in the Twin Cities area, you don't have to go too far. Well, there's one track that I help out at Cedar Lake Speedway. They have a 2-day show there.
Right.
That Logan Schuhart won his first ever World of Outlaws race last year on the Friday night portion of the races. And of course, Donnie Schatz would go and win the next night, which he pretty much, if it's a 2-day show, you know, Donnie Schatz is going to win at least one of the nights.
Yes.
Actually, David Gravel, which is kind of funny to say, David Gravel, his first World of Outlaws Series win was actually a track in Minnesota as well. Uh-huh. At Cedar Lake Speedway is not in Minnesota. It's about
Wisconsin.
10 minutes into the state of Wisconsin. So for most people, it's pretty much you feel like you're in Minnesota. but David Gravel won a track up in northern Minnesota when he was with, I think it was Destiny Motorsports. Those World of Outlaws sprint cars and late models, but more of the sprint cars is because the World of Outlaws sprint cars have this, you know, massive heritage and tradition behind it. I mean, that's just a traveling circus. I mean, those guys, the events that they run and the miles that they put on, and, you know, each night you may have a guy that he may be slow one night, but the next night he might be just Jack the Bear and gets right to the front, and you get what Jason Sides, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Sides, some people laugh at him. Well, he'll still go out and win one or two races a year, and I might see him three times a year, and those three times I see him, he ends up having to get a provisional to make the show. Doesn't mean he's a bad driver. It's just some tracks don't fit him, and if they run 90-some nights, I think there's going to be a couple tracks that do, and it's just amazing to see you got 12 or 14 of those guys with the time and commitment, and you just got to really respect that. Kind of like you're saying, traveling circus that puts on one heck of a show. I mean, that's, I guess if I always try to get people to the, you know, it's kind of another goal we're kind of talking about, how do we make motorsports alive? You know, I think it's, you try to draw people into the races that have never gone before, which is a lot easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I think a great seller is the World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series. I mean, you can bring someone that could care less about racing in general, but you bring them to a World of Outlaws Sprint Car show, and they're going to walk away being like, oh my God, that is,
right,
you know, a bunch of nutsos in a coliseum.
The local support is there, or does a track rely on World of Outlaws to bring the cars with them when they come? Like, out here, we don't have 410s per se. We have primarily 360s, and we've got
60s.
two different touring series. There's the Patriot Sprint Tour, and then celebrating their
Empire Series, right? Is that up by
Lucas Oil Empire Super Sprints, right. And those are both 360 organizations. Then out further on the coast, we have URC, which is United Racing Club. Pennsylvania's full of 410 and 360 cars, or 358 cars, and we've got 360s primarily in New York that run on their own regional tours. So do you have that with the sprint cars out there as well? Do you have regional tours, or is it all
a little bit?
Yeah,
they have. So it's the IRA, which is Interstate Racing Association.
Mm-hmm.
That they are a 410 sprint car that runs basically throughout the Midwest, Upper Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Been around a decent amount of time. You know, I think that the Interstate Racing Association has been a good traveling series for, and that's, it's not a home track series, a traveling series, it's not a sanctioning body, in the sense of they have their own tracks, but they travel throughout the Midwest and have always put on a really good 410 sprint car show, with Knoxville only being, I know there's a couple drivers that are Minnesota guys that drive down 4 or 5 hours every Saturday night to race at Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll say, like, and we'll also got up in North Dakota, Canada region. There's the, and well, West Fargo is part of that too. And I think it's the Northern Sprints Association.
Yeah.
That have always been 410 sprints. That have always, when the World Laws come to town, you know, there's a couple of guys that actually do really well. And that's where Donnie Schatz came out of those organizations. Right. Wasota used to have a 360 sprint car program.
Yeah.
So yes and no. I mean, it's gone through changes throughout the years. There's this new series or newer series. It's called the Upper Midwest Sprint Series, and their highest division is a 360 winged sprint car.
Right.
And then they also have a traditional sprint car. We'll say a handful of those guys, if they run down at like the Knoxville 360 Nationals,
mm-hmm.
They probably won't go and win, but they always do competitive
gotcha.
With and against those guys. And that's a traveling series that kind of runs throughout the Upper Midwest. And I think it's kind of the funny thing is, like, I think maybe that's another thing over time. You know, you got teams that maybe find it easier to build a car and to know, okay, I may have to travel 3-4 hours, but I only have to travel 10 weekends, where if I'm committed to a racetrack, I have to run that racetrack 24 nights in a summer. Well, that's 24 weekends that I'm eating up. And I guess I know that's something that throughout the racetracks or throughout here, they've kind of cut back a little bit of the, we'll have a track champion, or they've given, we'll say, a couple nights throughout the summer off to one of the divisions.
Right.
So they don't feel like they have to be there for 20 some nights.
Yep.
Like the Cedar Lake Speedway that I helped out with last month, still continue to help out with, but was fully on deck last year. They tied up with NASCAR to run weekly series. Well, they only ran actually 6 nights that were an actual points race night. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, their schedule was full. It had like 34 dates on it. Well, with specials with the Modified Touring Series and the World of Outlaw Sprints and late models and UMP late models and you name this, you name that. Well, they fill up every weekend and they have their even instructions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Except for if you're a local driver, you can go travel other tracks, or I can build a car and know that, hey, you know, I can run 6 nights for points, and then their divisions are always good support divisions, like the nights that the World of Outlaw Sprints or late models or those higher series were at the races. And I think there's a handful of tracks that are kind of maybe going that route, and I think that's a smart route to go to.
Right. You were talking about trying to keep racing fresh and new and draw new people in. That's one of the things that we've seen a lot here, and these two things coincide with each other. Our racing population is dwindling, you know, weekly.
Yeah.
The number of people in the stands aren't there, and that population is aging, and we're not getting new bodies in the stands and the kids aren't involved with it. But the thing is every shop doesn't have a car anymore and kids aren't working on their cars the way that they used to. The cars are much different now and that drive isn't there. So those two things playing in with one another, definitely a factor of one of the reasons why the population is struggling. And then you've got, you know, the influx of cars coming is kind of like what you just described there with a packed schedule, trying to give people time off so that they can still have time with their family and so they don't feel like they're running ragged at the running the same track all the time. And we've got drivers that run Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and then follow the tour on top of that. So they're pushing 100 races, which is just unheard of. The casual racer who's running a sportsman car out of his shop isn't maintaining that schedule. And
no.
That's one of those things where the tracks now have been forced to sort of try to reevaluate what they're doing to try and get people from the outside in, and also reevaluate what they're doing in terms of their schedules to give those guys that are running the chance to be competitive. Because you know what, at tax time, when your refunds are here, you can have all the plans in the world to run races, but by the time you get to July and that money's spent and you got to put something new into the car and you haven't got the money to do it, it's easier to just let that car sit and go to the lake.
Yep, exactly. And that's the battle that I know as we are in the motorsports world are going to have to try to figure out over the next 10, 15 years. I know, like, you know, me growing up being on pit crews and stuff like that, it was no problem finding guys to help work on your race car. Well, now you can't find anyone as a young driver to help work on your race car, let alone find young drivers to race those cars, unless they were brought up in the system in the sense of go-karts and stuff like that at the age of 4 or 5. Like you're saying, it's if there's an industry that I would tell some young person to get into, it'd be probably try to be a mechanic along those lines, because I think that trade is a trait that there's a lot of people that don't know how to work on stuff.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. Getting close to the top of the hour here, hanging out with announcer Marty Gallagher, who spends a lot of his time at Cedar Lake Raceway in Wisconsin. Awesome talking with you. We do have some local stuff coming up that is of interest to everybody out there. March 3rd is move-in night. March 4th and 5th are the days of the show for Finger Lakes Speed World over at Finger Lakes Mall. We've got the Gas Racing Series, South Butler Speedway, also going to be involved. There's going to be modified sportsman cars. We've got a bunch of combative motorsports cars that are going to be on display, and they're doing the Focus on Racing, which is a special display driven specifically to the photographers that catalog all the racing that have been doing this for years and years and years. The Homemade Hall of Fame, if you've got a driver that you've got a lot of memorabilia from and you want to occupy a space with that, you're welcome to. Patriot Sprint Tour is going to be involved. I believe ESS is going to be passing out some information. Woodhull Raceway is going to be involved as well. Paradise Speedway going to be there. You can get schedule cards, you name it. There's going to be something there for everybody. Come in, check it out, wander around. On Saturday, the final round and 31st lap are both going to be airing live from Finger Lakes Mall during Finger Lakes Speed World. Turn 5 podcast with Steven Ovens, who's been on the show before, used to work at Outlaw Speedway, now working at Woodhull Raceway. He's going to be doing some element of live stuff. And then Sunday during the day, Crash Course Podcast with the Demolition Derby content. They are going to be live preceding the 3 o'clock RC Derby, where they're going to have the national rules, the stock rules, and the new truck division. And Brewster making the trip up from Virginia to do that. On Saturday, there is going to be an element of actual racing as part of Saturday's program, Small Addictions RC Track, which is the turf track down near J.C. Penney's. They are going to have the Creekside 150 for the Mud Boss division. They're running Outlaw Mud Bosses, Stock Mud Bosses, and then basically the Outlaw Late Models as well are all going to be running on the turf indoors at Small Addictions, and 150 laps the distance for that Stock Mud Boss Championship presented by Creekside Entertainment. Small Addictions, huge part of Finger Lakes Speed World this year. Unfortunately, Your work schedule, Marty, doesn't give you the chance to get out and see some of this indoor stuff that's going on. You know, we just talked about Small Addictions running indoor. A much different atmosphere when we have the races at Boardwalk Hall and out there on the coast, all the indoor racing there, and the Chili Bowl in Oklahoma. You don't get a chance to get to any of that stuff, huh?
No, and that's That's the Chili Bowl, I guess, would be the number one bucket list. I think the last couple of years we've tried to get a group together, get out there, and, man, it's fun to watch that. And luckily, that what MAV TV's showed it live the last couple of years. And, no, they're, you know, they end up...
Did I lose you? Well, how about that? We just lost Marty. It's unfortunate. Well, he was talking about the Chili Bowl, and the next question I was going to ask him was about the Gateway Nationals. We are right at the top of the hour anyhow, so I guess we're going to call this one good, unless I can get him back quickly. I'm doing it this way. Let's see if this will work. Got to try and rebound. And get a hold of Marty. Do it this way. And try and get a hold of him. But yeah, that the Finger Lakes Speed World Show is gonna be pretty sweet. I know they've got a bunch of people that are they're planning on coming there and being part of that show. It's gonna be a good one. And unfortunate end to our hour together. I'm trying to get, I think Marty's still on his phone, actually, and I'm trying to get him there we go. We're getting closer. That's the glory of doing things live, right, Alan?
Hey, Chris.
There's Marty. We got him back.
Hey. We got my little 7-month-old helping me out tonight, and she decided that it needed to hit the end dial. on my phone there. So sorry about that.
No problem at all.
We're back on.
I understand how that goes.
Yeah, the Chili Bowl is obviously hopefully one of these make it out to that. But just indoor racing and stuff in general, it's not as popular as it is out on the East Coast or you hear somewhere throughout other parts of the region. But at the same time, I wonder too, is you think snowmobile, and I know snowmobile is big up by you guys. I know the Amazoil snowcross makes its way up that way. That I think there's a lot of people that are race car people that spend their winter months ice fishing or snowmobiling somewhere. They take some time off and spend some time in the sun.
Yep, that's. However, though, in the summertime, if you're open to travel, we'll have to start seeing if we can get a couple tracks on board and get you out here so that you can finally see some Northeast Modifieds.
That'd be perfect. No, it's that's how I always look at that Super Dirt Car Series, your schedule and stuff like that. It's I think the farthest east they come, maybe Ohio. Besides, obviously, I know they go down to Florida and they go to the World Finals in North Carolina. What they need to do is they just need to get one of those races in Knoxville. That'd be a heck of a track to watch those things riff around Knoxville.
They go to Michigan
down there in Iowa.
They're going to be in Eldora. They're pairing that with the truck race when the trucks go on the dirt with NASCAR's Truck Series. When they go on the dirt in Eldora, they'll be in conjunction with that. And then after that, they go to Sharon Speedway. But they do get up into Michigan, or they have in the past. And it would be neat to see, but I don't know. I'd love to see them get up there to one of those one of those legendary tracks up there in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, no, it'd be definitely one of these days. Maybe that will happen. Otherwise, it'll be I'll just have to make a trip out to the East Coast to check them out live at the original tracks with those big block modifieds.
That'd be awesome. Well, Marty, we're right at the top of it now. Sorry I lost you there for a few minutes,
you.
But I had a great time talking with you tonight. Be sure to stay in touch, man.
Definitely, thank you, Chris. Keep up the good work, and I guess for everyone out there listening tonight, obviously, you're listening because you're a race car fan. Try to grab someone, bring them out to the races that maybe is not used to going to the racetrack on a Friday, Saturday night, or a weekday night. Try to get this sport growing and get some fresh sponsors into the sport, and hopefully, kind of keep this sport that we love alive and upward.
That sounds good to me. We got to keep it growing, Marty. Right. Marty Gallagher, announcer. Announcer extraordinaire all over the upper Midwest, working with a bunch of different tours and at Cedar Lake. Man, I appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris. Have a good night.
Take care. There yep. goes. Thanks. There goes Marty Gallagher wrapping up his appearance here on the 31st lap, and that is going to do it for us. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us here for the hour. Good talk with Marty. We're going to be back here again in 2 weeks. Next week, we're going to be back with on Thursday night with Final Round. Just stay tuned for posts, and we'll let you know more about what's going on over there at Finger Lakes Speed World when we're live. Thanks. That's going to do it for us here at FingerLakes1.com Studios in Seneca Falls. We'll see you next time.